Scriptural Relation of Religion and the State, Chapter 9. Is it lawful to pay tribute? Another question growing out of that of the relation of church and state is the one referring to the taxation of church and ecclesiastical property. Should church property be thus exempted? Again, consistency requires a negative answer. No other position can be taken by those who believe in the total separation of church and state. As we look candidly and closely at the question, we shall discover many good reasons for declaring this position. It is evident that whoever does take it must strike directly at the overtowering cupidity of the natural heart that leads men gladly to accept all such favors that are extended to them, without stopping to scrutinize very closely the source whence they come, or the principles that may be involved in receiving them. There is a gratification in receiving monetary favors that forms a temptation hard to resist in most people when a favorable opportunity comes along. And it is not going too far to say that it is a pity the church does not set the world a better example in this respect than she does. The church, of all institutions, cannot afford to barter her birthright for a mess of pottage, nor sacrifice her position as the light of the world for covetous considerations. Therefore, in the investigation of this subject, the thought of the money involved should be waived for the earnest consideration of the real principles that underlie. There is a right and a wrong side to every question. The importance of being on the right side is often greater than the intrinsic importance that attaches to the question itself. It may be so in this case, certainly it is, for the saving of any sum of money would not compensate for the sacrifice of any principle. If there be a moral phase to the question, that should receive first attention. There is such a side to it, and upon it the Savior was not silent in his teachings, and certainly we shall not do better than to ascertain what he has taught upon this point. The subject was brought to his attention in the following manner. His enemies came to him and asked, "Is it lawful for us to give tribute unto Caesar, or no?" But he perceived their craftiness, and said unto them, "Why tempt ye me? Show me a penny. Whose image and superscription hath it?" They answered and said, "Caesar's." And he said unto them, "Render therefore unto Caesar the things which be Caesar's, and unto God the things which be God's." Luke 20, verse 22-25. The bearing of this precept of our Savior upon the subject of the relation of church and state is very broad and comprehensive. It covers the entire ground and sheds light upon many questions that arise. It teaches that there is a plain distinction to be drawn between that which pertains to Caesar, or the civil power, and that which belongs to God. The civil power has its work to do and its means for accomplishing it, and God has his work and means. Those that belong to the civil power bear the stamp of earthly authority, and that which pertains to God's work bears the impress of the divine hand. There is a remarkable degree of wisdom conveyed in this saying of Christ, for the distinction that it makes is one that may be carried into all the relations of life. Everywhere we meet the obligations of life. Every step brings us face to face with some duty. Some of these pertain to this world, some we owe directly to God. This belongs to God. That to Caesar. This we owe to the state or to society as citizens. That we owe to God and humanity as Christians. It is true that as Christians under God, we owe a faithful discharge of all these duties. We are taught by this injunction that upon all men rest binding obligations both to God and the secular power, and that because a man is a Christian and counts himself a member of Christ's kingdom, he is not thereby freed from any obligation imposed upon men by the state. What is true of the individual is true also of the church as a body of individuals. The tribute money was Caesar's. It should be paid to him, and there is no possible reason why, if it were the duty of Christ's disciples to contribute to the support of the oppressive Roman Empire, it is not still the duty of every Christian and of every church to pay to the civil government its just dues, and to render to Caesar the things that belong to him, as well as to be faithful in the other feature of the precept. It would have been a sufficient accusation for his enemies if they could have successfully maintained the charge that Jesus repudiated the paying of tribute by his people. It would have been tantamount to treason, and his condemnation would have been most certain and easy. Christ met the issue squarely and left on record a wise precept which his church would do well to study in all its varied bearings and conform to in all their relations with the world. It is not a sufficient excuse for ignoring this precept that the state does not exact the tribute. The principle involved is of such importance to the standing of the church that she cannot afford to sacrifice it without protest, even if the state does consent. From what we learn in the circumstance of Christ's paying tribute to the temple at Capernaum, it is easy to discern our Savior's sentiment upon this matter. Here, Peter was confronted with the question, "Doth not your master pay tribute?" He saith, "Yes." He did pay his rightful dues to all, and Peter well understood that. However, in this instance, the Lord easily proved that as Lord of the temple, there could not be anything required of him. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, he wrought a miracle to show his willingness to conform to the usages of the land, which do not involve disobedience to the divine law. It would be perfectly safe for the church, as it certainly is for the individual, to follow the example and teachings of her Lord in this as well as in all other matters. Not only has the Savior spoken upon this subject, but the apostles also make it a point in their teachings. Said Paul, "For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." Romans 13, verse 6, 7. Are tribute and custom due to the state? Then let the Church of Christ set a good example by paying it. It is sometimes urged that the Church should be exempt from taxation because her influence and work are auxiliary to the welfare of the state and community at large. While we may believe that, there are others equally interested in the government who do not allow the claim. We believe it, but if it be true, it signifies nothing, for the same claim might with equal propriety be set up by any worthy enterprise whatever, be it social, educational, commercial, or financial. They all contribute to national success. But how are they enabled to do so? Through the protection of the state, through benefits derived from the civil authority, without which they could not exist. Therefore, it is due to the state that they should contribute to the public welfare. Otherwise, they have no right to continue under the government. In return for the guardianship of the state, these associations are called upon to pay tribute, to bear their proportion of the expenses of the government. The church has her share of the benefits of the law. Why should she not pay for these as well as others? The church is not doing the work of the state, nor has the state any call to do the work of the church, though it undertakes to aid in this work when it exempts ecclesiastical property from taxation. This work is assumed by the state, but the burden comes upon those who pay its taxes. When a portion of the property in a community is released from taxation, the result must be that that which is held must bear a heavier burden. If in a town where there is property to the value of 10 millions, 1 million is held by the churches and is exempted from taxation, then 1/10 of the taxes raised from that source is raised to support the churches. But in our day, it is not generally supposed to be the proper thing to support religion by legal taxation. This has been done, but it is looked upon as a relic of the dark past, and very properly so. But there is practically no difference between remitting taxes and making an appropriation out of money raised by taxation. If a church owns property which should pay a tax of £10, and that tax is remitted, it is done upon the same principle that the state would donate £10 to that or another society. This fact is commended to the special consideration of those who are opposed to the establishment of state churches, that is, to having the people at large taxed to support religion, and yet do not hesitate to court and accept the exemptions under consideration. We are virtually doing the same thing by excusing the church from doing its share in the maintenance of the government. It is a gift to the church out of the public revenues, and the amount must be made good by increased taxation upon other property. In the colony of Victoria, there was, up to 1875, the sum of £50,000 given annually to the churches out of the public treasury. Since that time, the gift has been withheld, and very many think that to stop the gift was a step in the right direction. Undoubtedly, it was so, but what is being done in the same colony at the present time may be gathered from a consideration of the vast amount of church property now held in Victoria, absolutely free from taxation. Were this large amount of property bearing its share of the public burden, either the revenue would be increased or the burdens of others would be appreciably lightened. As already said, this is a gift to the church from the secular power. The Bible estimation of such a gift is stated in the following language: Thou shalt not respect persons, neither take a gift, for a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous. Deuteronomy 16, verse 19. It would be a hard impeachment of the church to say that this does not apply to her, for that would imply she was neither wise nor righteous. In fact, there is no place in which they will apply with more force than to the Church of Christ. The church needs to keep herself unspotted from the world. And in a place where she can bear a plain testimony to the powers that be, as well as people in private life. Not only do the favors thus received serve to pervert righteousness and plain speaking of the truth, but they lead to even greater wrong through the temptation that is thus placed before men and churches in the largest cities, where through this exemption, property may be held for speculative purposes, for the rise in value, and for rental. Cupidity leads the church to hold and rent premises for purposes that are in direct antagonism to the work of the church. Of course, these facts will not lie very heavily on the consciences of those whose chief anxiety is to keep the church wealthy or self-supporting. To such, it is simply a good stroke of business. But it should have great weight with those who are jealous for the purity and spiritual power of God's cause, who are anxious that the conduct of the church should comport with her profession and high calling. From every point of view except that of covetousness, the situation demands that the church should stand clear of the state in this matter. And it ought not to be said that this consideration counts more with the church than any and all others. The work of the church should rest upon the devotion of those who profess the Master's name. Benevolence is not only a Christian grace, it is also a moral duty, and the more it is cultivated, the more and the greater the grace that will attend it. Some Christians have rightly perceived this question and have placed their influence on the side of the truth. The Baptists are, as a people, opposed to any alliance between Christ's people and Caesar. They are calling for reform in this matter. The denomination of Seventh-day Adventists, at the session of their general conference held in America in February 1893, unanimously passed the following preamble and resolutions. In view of the separation which we believe should exist between the church and the state, it is inconsistent for the church to receive from the state pecuniary gifts, favors, or exemptions. Therefore, resolved, that we repudiate the doctrine that church or other ecclesiastical property should be exempt from taxation, and further, resolved, that we decidedly protest against such exemption and favor the repeal of all legislation under which this exemption is granted,